Welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast, the recently banned Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We've been shot down on YouTube for some crazy reason. I think we got botted. But it's kind of indicative of what rhetoric is these days and the complicated nature of the digital space. This is the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. I'm going to teach you how to use rhetoric to get out there and get what you want in the world with good rhetoric, using the good side of the force, not the dark arts. Keep those people quiet. I'm Dr. Dan, American rhetorician, escaped professor, jetted out of the ivory tower, got pushed out like a bird out of the nest, baby bird. Also late night comedy writer, stand-up comic, founder of Rhetoric Warriors. The podcast does three things. I talk to comedians about their politics, which is always fun. I convert conservatives because I think they need it. And I glean persuasion advice from persuasion pros or people who have very specific and interesting expertises in persuasion. And I think that's kind of my guest today, even though she's also done some comedy along the way. Very funny. My guest today is Kirsten Karchmer. She's an entrepreneur, a fertility super expert, I'm going to say, tech startup queen, social justice warrior for women's rights to be women. So welcome, Kirsten Karchmer.
Hello, hello. So good to see you.
You've done a lot of this digital stuff now. Like you have a huge TikTok presence, so you've gotten pretty comfortable talking into a camera.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I'm my new best friend. I see myself every single day. We have a lot of long conversations, watching myself age on the camera. You know, it's super sexy.
That is odd, right? You're talking to yourself. Always like that's never, you never had a mirror right next to the other person while you're talking.
I always love it. Like when you're camping, you know, and there's no mirrors anywhere, you're peeing in the woods. Like even when you go to the bathroom, you're just looking at a tree, and suddenly with the pandemic, all you're doing is looking at yourself. And what's weird is because I am on TikTok a lot and there's some fucking fabulous filters on TikTok. I look like I'm 18. Then if I get on a Zoom call, I'm Jesus Christ, who's that old lady in the camera? You know, it's like, what happened?
Yeah, it's unforgiving, all these high-def technologies and cameras. So let me run people your background real quick because I want to focus on some of your more advanced stuff today. You were a brick-and-mortar owner of three fertility clinics, I think. Very successful at that for many years, getting women pregnant who had difficulty getting pregnant, didn't think they could get pregnant, and you did not agree with that diagnosis. So you have very good alternative, a lot of times Eastern approaches to fertility.
I call it integrative.
Integrative, good word. Not sure what it means, but it sounds like a good thing to integrate. Then you went to tech startup land and you wanted to take all that knowledge and move it over into an app. And you started Conceivable, where you had an online solution for women who could follow your system and use that to get pregnant, get healthy, yada, yada, right? Yeah. Did that for a while, and then that morphed over into Brazen, which is your current thing, which is, you know, one of the greatest names ever that a woman could bring to the table for business.
No, I like a name, Dan.
You just call it In Your Face.
Well, you know, I wanted to call it, you know, a lot of different things, but I really wanted to call it Happy Kitty more than anything, because I would talk to so many women and people with periods who would say, oh yeah, I'm using this app. I can't remember what the name of it is. And I was like, I never want anybody to say that about mine. I want them to for sure remember. And I was like, oh, Happy Kitty. It's a nice little homage to Chinese medicine with a little Happy Kitty. But
yeah, it had potential. Like we've talked about your names and your words and things a lot over the years, trying to figure out how do you exist in this space. So again, like that, like you get people remember you, it communicates what it is, but it doesn't over communicate. You know, you have a lot of challenges.
Brazen's really sexy because it means to overcome something shameful with swagger, like period shame. So for me, that gave me carte blanche to really like be as brazen as I wanted to be and do whatever I want to be like, hey, it's brazen, just being brazen.
Well, and it's one of those adjectives that has been like, it gets linked up. You know, it's like the Elizabeth Warren thing about, and still she persisted, you know, like brazen hussy. As always, you always have that connection. It has that good 1800s saloon feel to it. So it's a good word.
Yeah, it's juicy.
Older word too, right? Nobody really uses brazen very much.
Except at my house. Because I always tell my kids, well, that's brazen.
Yeah, I'm sure you're the house that uses that word more than any other on your street.
Well, that, and I always, my kids will say, why is that, Mom? Whatever. And I say, ancient Chinese secret. And they always say, how many times are you going to say that in my life? And I'm like, a lot. Just dig in.
Hey, you have a mom that's a Chinese medicine expert. You're going to hear some of the terminology, right?
For sure. It's a bonus, I think.
So talk about this. You've had a journey. You went from the brick and mortar world to the tech startup world, and now over into what seems a lot more like a social justice world to me, that you're still bringing those legacies with you, but you're now, a lot of what you do is talking to younger girls about periods and about the female body and how everything works, and trying to create a herd of people that are educated that follow you on TikTok. So talk about that. What's been your experience with all that?
Well, I think that what I continue to realize is that, you know, since the beginning of written language, women have sort of been shamed into thinking that they're filthy and worthless, and they just believe it. And even when I talk to women about their periods and what's normal and not normal, I'm shocked by how many will argue with me to say, like, actually suffering with your period is normal. And if, when I looked at the data around how, you know, 80% of women were reporting significant and life interrupting menstrual pain. And Dan, you and I had a conversation about this, like, how can we possibly change anything or win any strides in the women's movement if nearly every person with a period is really suffering and literally nobody's talking about it or doing anything about it? So it became real interest to me to really go out and talk about, like, that your menstrual cycle isn't a curse. It feels like a curse because you don't have any resources to fix it, but it's basically your check engine light. It's the tool that you can see to measure against monthly in a way to say your body, you know, will reflect back to you every single month how it likes or dislikes the way that you're caring for it in a very clear way every single month through all the characteristics around your menstrual cycle. And I just felt like it was really important to sort of be at the forefront of changing the conversation that we are not inferior. We are not feeble. We are not filthy. Actually, we're superhumans. We can actually take one cell and turn it into a human. It's like, I don't know, kind of pretty remarkable. Yet we're in the closet hiding about it, in the sanitary aisle, spraying, you know, deodorant all over it, and et cetera. So, you know, as I, by accident, became a TikTok star, literally by pure accident, I realized that the root, which is always interesting to me, the root of the problem was, is that young girls and people who would be menstruators were going through puberty with literally no information, asking me questions like, hey, I want to use a tampon. I have no idea what hole to put it in, you know, and having no one to talk to about it. So it's been, you know, just helping me realize that the starting point for this conversation will be like maybe before people get their periods.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this. I mean, again, from a communication rhetoric strategy perspective, you're coming into a binary, at least, I mean, there's so many different ways to parse up your audience, but the very first one is binary audience, right? It's half male, it's half female. And you would talk about these things very differently if, like, the planet was all females, or the planet, you know, I guess we're all males, you wouldn't be talking about this at all. But that idea of trying to talk to binary audiences at the same time is very difficult. Like, you, it's something you would be an extreme challenge, even just in a conversation. If you ever had to, like, talk to two people at the same time that come from very different perspectives. So, like, we've talked about this, which one is your target audience? And there are sub-target audiences within each of those. So, like, now you're doing sort of pre, you know, so adolescent girls on TikTok, I would imagine, is most of that audience, right?
I mean, my audience spans, really, it's a person with a period. It really does span that whole reproductive life cycle. What's interesting about your comment is on the Brazen site where we, like, you know, sell products for PMS and cramping, 30% of our traffic are men. And they spend twice as long on the website as women do. So I think that's actually, to your point, very, very interesting. You know, I always sort of look at things through the it's on the edge of scientific. My approach is, you know, deeply rooted in like peer-reviewed data and clinical experience. So I think that actually for men, it's very easy for them to understand what we're talking about. I think it's actually harder to talk to women because they have bought into the mindset and the point of view that being a menstruator is a liability. I don't think that men think that being a menstruator is a liability. They think that being with a woman when she's having trouble with her menstruation is a, no pun intended, a black box that they don't know how to navigate.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I've talked about this in comedy before about the statement that it's difficult being a woman. You know, you hear this a lot. It's hard to be a woman. I'm like, I understand that from just being around one. Like that's, I'm only experiencing this in secondary form.
Yeah.
And I see it, you know, and it expands out into everything. Whenever somebody especially has a physical problem that dominates some of their experience and what they can and cannot do, and they're in pain. Yeah. It radiates out into everybody that's around you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see why men would be very interested in learning more.
I think, you know, and I think from two sides, like part of it is like, you know, my girl's driving me crazy and I need to fix it, right? Because she's a problem, or I'm really concerned and I want to help her, which I think is also part of the, you know, mode of men with their partners is like, I want to help and, you know, solve the problem and fix it. Not only because like she's being difficult, but because he cares about her.
We have a huge background in Eastern med in Korea, and like you got your training in Korea, right?
No, actually, I taught linguistics in Korea in my earliest career. It was the year before I went to acupuncture college. So, I did some training, but my formal training was in the U.S.
So if you're going to, again, this is part of the audience issue, right? So you start with there's some binary split, some gender split, and then people in the middle. And then you're like, okay, within that, you can start splitting down by age. But if you picked all this up and moved it over to Korea, how would it work? Like, could you talk in the same ways? Would it be the same, you know, reception that you get here?
I'm 100% no. I mean, I haven't lived there in 25 years. So obviously, culturally, there have been some, you know, evolution there. But what I will say is that, you know, that probably is not an appropriate conversation to have. I mean, well, one thing that happened that was so funny when you're in Korea, this is sort of like illustrative of just the don't talk about things. My good friend that I was with, you know, she had giant Italian knockers and really nobody has boobs in Korea. So boobs are really a commodity there. And we were in the bathhouse, which is like where people go to soak every single, you know, Sunday and scrub and whatever. And she got too hot and she passed out. And the ladies who like run the place are like in their lingerie, right? They're running around in like, you know, bras and underwear. They're tiny. They're like 5 feet tall. So cute. They get her up on the thing and they want to start doing some acupressure on her chest to try to resuscitate her. And they like, don't know what to do with her boobs. They're like, but nobody's saying anything, you know, they just like keep looking at each other. Like, I don't know how to navigate around these giant boobs. And so, you know, probably in Korea, those conversations would be much more likely to be happening. Like men and women were very segregated there. At least they were when I lived there. And so there was a lot of like groups of females hanging out and groups of males hanging out. Probably I would have never been privy to the males' social hours like I am here. So it would be mostly through those conversations of, you know, women, you know, watching their children and hanging out together. That'd probably be the only appropriate way to have that conversation.
Do you get anything on TikTok where you're moving out beyond American audiences?
TikTok has a VPN that keeps you in your language. So mostly I'm popular in English speaking languages just because my content doesn't get pushed out to other countries. So I wouldn't know. I don't know how I would try to get my TikTok. I probably have to start another feed and have a different VPN. And, you know, that's more technical than I could probably figure out on a regular basis. Plus it's a lot of work because, you know, I do a live show every single day. There's about 1,000 people on the live show. And then I can get 2,000 to 4,000 comments after that, that, you know, like I spend 30 minutes and then I'm like, I can't get to any more. Like that's as much as I can do.
So do you read those comments? How many of those comments do you read?
I read, you know me, Dan, I read whatever I feel like. Like I do sit and read them because there's so much to be learned. It's why I decided to make the puberty tracker for Brazen, because I realized that they were really crapping their pants about everything that was happening to their bodies. And, you know, wanted to create a resource. And then also like, when is my first period going to come? And what am I going to do? Like, I need to get ready.
It's so fascinating from a communication perspective. It always has been for me, working with you on this at different times and us just sort of talking about it informally. There's so many communication challenges here that you have information sitting over here, right? That you've developed through a lifetime of expertise and close-in work and actual experience with people. You know, yeah, a lot about this. That's why I say you're a super expert on female fertility and reproduction, right? And so it's sitting over here and you've got these language challenges in between you and your audience, and then your audience is split. So, you know, every decision you make on the language here, like you love the word period, you know, where did that word come from? And why is that the word? Is it that word in every culture? Would there be a more acceptable word or a fresher, newer, more pliable word? You know, period is so final. It's literally the end of something.
That's a good point. I would have, you know, that's an interesting linguistic endeavor to look at. I mean, there's euphemisms, right? Mostly, I don't think that there's, I'd have to look at like, because period isn't the technical word. I mean, mostly we see euphemisms around cultural context between Shark Week, like the British are invading. That's one in Europe, which I think is funny. You know, mostly around bleeding, red wave, red tide, high tide, ant flow, all those things. But to me, it's like saying like your wee wee and your hoo-ha for your vagina and penis. You know what I mean? Like,
no, we do replacement languages all the time. Like anything that becomes difficult, you know, it's going to have a difficult reception. Then you try to do euphemisms or replacement terms and all that. And I know like the hippie culture here in Austin, I've run into many times with the female mythology and go back and rescuing the goddess terms and that and moon blood and
all that shit so much. Know,
do you? Why do you love that stuff?
No, I don't love it. I hate it. I think it's, I don't know. I think that if we're going to attack the problem, that sort of softening it doesn't, like, I think it still demeans the experience that people are having, and that sort of, it's still something under the whole moon culture. It's still something that you just go into your hut and survive. And I'm like, it's actually a tool of badassery. Like, don't just tolerate whatever's happening. Use that as information so that we can understand the underlying cause of it, so that we can basically restore your badassery.
Well, and you're a mix of all these things. You have medical terminology. You have that, which is social justice terminology, you know, and you like it. I mean, you're good. That's part of your personality. I think you're very good at communicating it, this idea of badassery or, you know, tough girl and you know, all the stuff that's come out of, if you look at subcultures, I mean, one of the ways of doing naming and figuring out your communication strategies is to go and just harvest all these natural outgrowths of language and subcultures, because often they're genius. I mean, the things they come up with, they're very creative and, you know, extremely marketing friendly once you get people over to them. But you're a mix. You've got all this legacy language, you know, like you've got the importing mythology language, the medical language.
Right.
You're kind of sitting at the center of all that, which is one of the reasons why I think of you as a, you know, female social justice warrior, because you're trying to clean it up a little bit and see if you can get it organized for people so that it does good things for women.
Yes.
As opposed to this sending you to a hut, which.
Right. Well, I always just say, like, I think that women are pretty badass. Most of them are operating at half speed. What would happen if we unleashed them from the problems of their period? I'm pretty interested in seeing what would happen. Right? If we just cut them loose from all the chains of period pains, PMS, PMDD, worrying about their fertility, like, holy shit, what's possible?
So you've got a lot of people that have moved over into your world, like that are positive. So again, in persuasion, I often break things into valence of positive and negative, because it's just a very easy way to organize things and then organize your strategy around it. You're building a herd, a positive herd. You've got a lot of young girls. You got a lot of females in general that like this way you're approaching it and the terminology and everything else. What about the negatives? Like, because that's the other thing you've got to deal with, especially when you're doing very big persuasion to large audiences. You've got to figure out strategies for dealing with the people that are negative towards you. Who are some of your enemies in this that you're working on?
I would say there's less enemies than you would think, but the enemies that do exist are those people who actually are attached to their illness. Like I invited some women with PMDD to do a clubhouse with me. I'm really obsessed. If you don't know, PMDD is, it's not a form of PMS, but it looks very much like a crazy bad kind of PMS. It lasts from ovulation all the way until so full 2 weeks, and they're pretty much incapacitated. A third of the women with this condition will have a suicide attempt because of it. And so I asked this one woman that I met on Instagram, do you want to join and be a moderator? Like helps women with PMDD. Let's have a like cool conversation about PMDD. And she said, well, I noticed that you said like an integrative approach to PMDD. There isn't an integrative approach to PMDD. The only approach to PMDD is pharmaceutical. That's mostly my biggest enemy are people who are like, I'm like, but how's that working for you? You feel great? You seem bitchy. Right? It doesn't seem like you feel good. Like, I don't mean that in a mean way, right? And so, or the people say, you know, like people who have strong religious conviction about this will say, you're interrupting God's work. Like God is training us for the pains of labor. What the hell do you say to that? I'm like, that is not a cool God. I'm sorry. I am not friends with that God. If that's what God's idea of like helping us to have labor, that is no God that I want to hang out with. Or that's God's punishment for Eve's sin in the garden.
Sure.
Those are the kind of haters that mostly I get. A few will say like, there's no data to support that. And then I show them the data and they're like, that data is not good. And like, here's more data, you know, especially because, you know, my work is largely like, basically I invented everything that I say. So sometimes there's not perfect data to support the system because, you know, what I do is look at the intersection of every single sign, symptom, menstrual characteristic, temperature, behavior, mindset, and find the relatedness between those, identify what the underlying cause and fix that. And so that's a whole, I think the haters come from like, that's not possible that it's that easy. Why is drinking water gonna help my fertility? I was like, well, cause you only drink one glass of water a day and you don't have any cervical discharge. What's cervical discharge made out of? Water. So first step, free and easy, drink 8 glasses of water for a month and come back and tell me what happened.
Well, and I think, you know, my experience in the alternative communities has been that like, hey, there's test this on yourself, do the N of one, quit worrying about the studies because you're never going to get perfect studies. Yes, it's great if you get a quality study. Everybody loves information. But N of one, that stuff, and figure out, I'm giving you something simple and safe, drinking more water, see if it makes a difference, you know?
And I was just thinking how like studies are their own form of rhetoric, right?
Oh, sure.
Right. It's its own. That's a whole conversation about like, you know, basically a study is a story we tell with numbers, but through whatever lens that we want to tell that story through. But also I think that it's even interesting. Like what I do is really effective and it's crazy effective. So I'll be like, okay, here, I'll send you some stuff. Get started on this and come in. You don't have to pay, or I'll refund you, you know, 150% back. Like I don't have any doubts that it will produce a result that I'm telling you to, but yet still something about it. Like I can't trust this. Like it's too unbelievable. I've been suffering. Maybe it's around, I've been suffering too long for this to be this easy to fix it. I don't know what the psychology is behind it, but I think there's this, steadfastness around that's not possible. And why doesn't my doctor know about it if it's so good?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, if we were laying this out, a lot of times I'll create a persuasion tree for people when I'm designing persuasion, like everything on the left is what gets people to say yes to you, all the branches on the left. And everything on the right is all the things that are getting them to say no. And your job is to either amplify the branches on the left, grow them, make them stronger, and then cut off every branch on the right. Because the branches sort of still existing on the right are what typically keep people from moving. They will get people stuck. So if they have this idea like that, like I don't make medical decisions unless I get studies from some type of source that I really trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're going to use that branch, then you either have to go in and give them that branch or cut it out. And a lot of times the easier strategy is just to cut that branch and be like, hey, there are no perfect, like we just did, there are no perfect studies. Studies are a story. They are a rhetoric. You know, you can't just rely on that. If you do, you'll be frozen in place forever. So if you can remove that branch, then people will start looking at all the other things and you can get some motion again in their conversion.
Mm. Well, I also think that as a clinician and a diagnostician, I'm always, you know, for those people, that is a diagnostic indicator, that rigidness, right? That is a place to actually start asking more questions to understand, because that's part of the pathology. Like in Chinese medicine, nothing is separate, you know? What's being expressed on the outside and the inside are deeply connected and diagnosable through both lenses.
And I think that's right. I mean, that again, if you look at the right side of your tree, rigidness would be sitting there. And you're like, if I don't deal with that branch, nothing else I do is going to matter. And once people rigidize, and you see this a lot in persuasion, like you talked about Christianity earlier, it's a very rigidizing form of rhetoric. All religions are. It's like once you've accepted the premises of the religion, everything else falls away because you're like, that's what I'm attaching myself to. And it's incredibly rigid. And to go in and change somebody's religion or change a behavior that the religion dominates or tells them what to do and what not to do becomes very difficult unless you can deal with the religion, which again is exactly what you did a few minutes ago. When you're like, that's not the kind of God I want. You know, that basically invalidates their entire religion.
Making friends fast. I always make friends so fast, you know.
Yeah, you have a chainsaw. You're like, I don't like this branch. Which makes sense. You have a lot of people to talk to.
Shit to do, man. I don't have time to be like namsy pamsy and stuff.
Yeah. And your situation now is like you've got a big enough herd on your left of positive people that are generally positive. You're amplifying instead of constantly dealing with the negatives.
Yes. And at least on TikTok, because the people that are on my live show every single day are pretty big fans, if anybody jumps in and has any shenanigans, they kick their ass. It's like a bully beat down in there. They're like, she is like, sometimes they'll, because you know, I'm 53. Sometimes somebody will come in and say, how old are you anyways? Like, why are you even on TikTok? And they will kick their ass. My little 13-year-olds, you know, they can be mean 13-year-old girls. And they would like, what's wrong with you? This is a free to help us. You need to get out. We're going to block you. We're going to report you.
Yeah. It's an interesting time. Again, like when that herd and that swarm is working for you, it's great. When it decides to work against you, not so great. You know, the Beyonce beehive is the best example of that. You know, you get a few hundred thousand people attacking you, you're going to get enough stings to make a difference.
A few hundreds attacking you. I mean, even if just a few comments on, I'm sensitive in that way. Like sometimes I'm like, that's not true. Don't say that in my heart, not out loud. But I think that there was something that you said that made me think of something, but now I lost it. So I'll let you keep going.
Well, I was talking about, I've given you a chainsaw, which I really like. I like that image of how you deal with all that stuff. It's like, I don't need you, you know, coming in and, you know, reminding me of the negative. I can't waste my energy on that. I've got too many people who want good stuff over here. And that's where I want my energy to be. Because you only have so much energy as a persuader and a communicator and a business person. And you need to allocate it. You know, that's why I kind of asked you, are you reading all these comments? Because I don't read comments. I try not to even allow comments in my stuff. It just takes too much of my brain. It changes the way I start writing and the way I start thinking and analyzing things. And the value of, I think, what people get from people who have strong perspectives that they've learned over time is that perspective. You don't want it watered down. I want the best stuff you've got about this.
Yeah.
As soon as you start tempering it, the value of your information, I think, changes.
Except I would challenge you on that. Like, the thing about the comments are that they often drive my content. Because you start, if you just spend 30 minutes just scrolling and looking at the comments, you start to see what their fears are, what their concerns are, what they're dealing with that maybe you hadn't even thought about as a content piece that you happen to be an expert in, that you're like, oh, I could do a few videos. And those end up being multi-million view videos often.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you completely cut yourself off from your audience. I'm just saying that you have to manage it so that it doesn't end up doing harm to you as, you know, the single persuader trying to do good things in the world. When you get, yes, you know, you get good feedback, that's awesome.
Well, I think on TikTok, it's 99% positive. It's a very great community, unless you're doing something dickish, you know, but Instagram and Facebook can be awful. And I would never go on Reddit again. If you put a gun to my head, that's the scariest place on the planet. I'd rather go. Yeah. Anyways.
Isn't it weird? Like, every digital universe has its own tone, its own community, you know, practices, and
they'll fuck you up on Reddit. Like, these girls were in a PCOS group, which is a metabolic disorder similar to pre-diabetes, affects your cycle. And somebody was saying, like, oh, what do y'all drink for breakfast, whatever. And I wasn't even on there as like Kirsten the entrepreneur. I was just like, Kirsten, here to help. And the girl says, well, what I do and I recommend for everyone is I drink a smoothie. And I said, what do you put in your smoothie? And she said, she's got pre-diabetes, right? So she's like, I put a banana, apple juice, a beet, you know, an orange, I don't remember. Like, and I was like, oh, basically in my head, I'm like, oh, great. Now you're going to have diabetes tomorrow after you drink. That's like 2000 grams of sugar. So I just said, really nice. I said, hey, just because you have PCOS, it might be good to sub out, like, maybe, you know, almond milk, and like some things that are not so sugary. And then somebody looked up who I was. It was like business, like 30 of them bullied down, fucking bitch. Like, we didn't ask you to be here. We don't want your stupid comments. We don't want what you're selling. I was like, oh my God. So yeah, have to be careful there.
Well, it's weird.
You look like you've frozen
social
them.
Justice stuff and trying to make a living. You know, the money, can you hear me? I think I lost you.
Okay.
Yeah. And what I was saying is, like, it's sometimes those are opposing personas. The social justice person trying to good for people in the world, but also trying to make money. Like, the capitalist part of it invalidates the social justice part of it for people, which makes no sense since everything in this country is capitalist, but it invalidates your motives and, you know, whether they should listen to your information and all that kind of stuff. No matter how much you do for free.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you, if you won this, if you were winning, like, what does winning look like to you? Like, right now you're winning on TikTok. What else does winning look like for you in this?
It's a long game, the winning for me. It's two things. So the first thing is, when my daughter has a daughter, that I overhear a conversation that they're like hanging out doing something, you know, and the granddaughter says to her best friend, she says, you know, when my mom was little, like, women used to really suffer from their periods really badly. And they would like have to stay home, and they like were really, really suffer. They passed out from pain. And the other girl looks at her and says, no way, that's fake news. That's what I want to hear. And then I want to win the Nobel Prize in Medicine.
Okay. Well, so you have small goals.
Then I will have won. Because not because I have the attitude that like I want to win the Nobel Prize, but the Nobel Prize, I want to show actually how easy it is to give people health almost for free. Like, using technology without labs, without anything fancy, like the cheapest fucking thing, if you just do it correctly, can be incredibly cost effective and can provide health for practically anyone on the planet.
Well, I like to go back into the deep logic of people's beliefs, because they don't go back there very often. So they're not very protected. This idea, you know, in evolutionary medicine, you get this a lot, that you have to start with the premise. Like, if you think female periods are always supposed to be painful and you're supposed to have all these symptoms and all that stuff, then for some reason our species evolved to that. Why would we possibly have evolved to that? That makes no sense in evolution, right? It means we're doing something wrong that doesn't fit with evolutionary logic. And in some ways you're going back and replacing that. You know, what it would be like if you were living in the natural world and eating in natural ways and having, you know, water and all this stuff, where it wasn't something you had to consciously monitor. It's just the nature itself tells you this is how you have to live. And so we're out of sync with that.
Right. Well, I think that it's like, like we were talking about religion. You know, if you look at whatever diet, right, paleo, vegan, whatever, in my clinical experience, being a vegan was not conducive to a healthy period or fertility. It's like over indexed for infertility patients who are vegans. And, but that's kind of a religion for people. And so it's about breaking down this idea. It's like, you know, it's like what I always say, well, how's that working for you? You know, they're like, no, but I'm so healthy. And like, but you've been trying to get pregnant for 3 years and you only have one day of menstrual blood and you want to kill yourself before your period comes. Like, to me, that's not healthy. And like, but that's just my period. I was like, but you don't have enough menstrual blood to have the liver function. And either you have to really be a better vegan, you know what I mean? So that you're getting those nutrients, or consume some animal products so that we can like make some blood. So I think that that's a big piece of it, is really untangling those attachments to, it's not even just about living in a natural world. It's like, how, whatever you're doing, whether you're eating paleo or keto or everything or vegan, like, how is that reflected in my cycle? And then how do we change that and measure, does it change in the cycle or not? So really syncing up the behavior with the outcome of the cycle is a really valuable thing. And, you know, I think that's where the work is for us. But, you know, there is some evolutionary studies on PMS. And some of those studies show that potentially, while there's no clear link specifically with PMS and infertility, from an evolutionary point of view, they think that potentially it was a evolutionary strategy to break up infertile couples.
PMS? That's great.
It would be great if there was any data to show that PMS... I mean, having depressive disorders, which PMS can be categorized as a depressive disorder, is highly correlated with infertility. But, and I think that there's no study saying that PMS is not linked with, I think they just haven't studied it.
Well, this again is part of the problem when you go back into deep logic. You can bend explanations, like strong theories, you can bend them to explain almost everything and mm-hmm. sometimes explain it very well. And I've heard evolutionary theory used to basically support almost everything, even down to, oh, men are supposed to dominate, you know, and women are smaller and therefore they should be subordinate. And that's the way we evolved as a species. You know, unfortunately, we're not evolving anymore. We interrupted evolution 10 or 15,000 years ago, at least, when we started farming and building, you know, structures and civilizations. Evolution is just you in relationship to a physical planet. And we're not in that anymore. Like, it still freaks us out now when the planet goes, you know what? Remember me? I'm still here. I'm going to freeze you down in Texas for a week. See how that feels.
I'm going to send you a little coronavirus. See how that goes.
Yeah. You know, all that stuff that reminds us, though, we are subjected to the planet.
We are the subservience.
We don't like that idea. That is not a human idea that we will accept ever. And even the idea of tying your behaviors back to your period health, that is opposite of what people want to do. They want to tie their behaviors, like their eating, to pleasure. Period. That's it. Period. There you go. Right? That's much more natural than any other type of eating. That's what we're really designed to do, is you eat what's in your environment that tastes good. It's just now that's been interrupted by all this capitalism and science and everything else, and it's destroying us.
That's why there's always cake at my house, because, you know, I like to eat what tastes good and is in my environment.
Yeah, right? I mean, literally, that's what it's supposed to be. This whole idea of cognitively controlling your behavior and controlling your eating to get good health outcomes, that's an unnatural system by definition. Mm-hmm. Like, you're supposed to eat what your tribe has always eaten and what your mother tells you, oh, look, yeah, here, this plant is great. We've been eating this for 500 years. And you're like, oh, it is great. And that's it.
Yeah.
So that's a win for you, is if in the future, this isn't even an issue. Like, you're not even needed.
Yeah. Well, they say, you know, one of the things I say a lot is in Chinese medicine, they say the good doctor treats the patient. The great doctor can treat society, but the master knows how to make herself obsolete. So that's always my guiding principle, is what, you know, because like when I built Conceivable after being a clinician, the goal was to build a software application that was at least 50% as good as me. Cause I was like, well, there's no acupuncture and there's no me. And, you know, I got a big ego. Like, that has to be a big role. And it's a lot of teaching, right? And so it's like, if we can do that at 1/100th the cost of IVF, that's still worth doing. And the fucking algorithm outperformed me. Right. And but then at that moment I was like, oh, that's a big piece of humble pie. I'm going to close my clinic. But I did it. I made myself obsolete as an acupuncturist. So now with Brazen, I'm trying to make Conceivable obsolete. If we teach people about the relevance of their cycle, and we teach them how to fix their period problems, and how by doing that, they increase their natural fertility, down the road, we actually won't need Conceivable because people aren't going to have fertility issues.
Right. So Conceivable, like, are you talking about with Brazen? So when you talk about fixing people's periods, are you talking about mostly health behaviors like eating, sleep, that kind of stuff, water, or are you talking about supplementing with like the Brazen tinctures and that kind of stuff?
All of it. So, you know, what I should just have a t-shirt that I wear every day. It's all connected. So they all work together, like the right diet for that person, the right amount of sleep for that. It's like basically technology that biohacks, but instead of using other metrics that conventional biohackers are using, we're using the feedback of the menstrual cycle as the biohacking feedback tool. And then dictating what we need to do. And instead of using generic supplements like nootropics or whatever, we're using the right Chinese herbs to fix that person's particular problem. And then, you know, do that for 30 days. We watch how the whole system changes. And then they have a period. We check our work, like long division. And then we create a new intervention customized to what it looks like now. We keep peeling back the layers of the onion. And then, you know, over 3, 4, 5 months, not only the PMS or the cramping or the fertility changes, actually the whole system has now changed and everything's better.
I was going to say, you really do have multiple camps of rhetoric that you need to keep clean to be able to use. Like, what you just did was this sort of super quant, you know, a quantified self, tying everything through an app, multivariate analysis of all these different things, and then making, you know, recommendations from that. And that is only really possible with a computer and an app and, you know, all that kind of approach to controlling human behavior and outcomes. And over here, you've got sort of stories and new terminology and things like that for adolescent girls and real people who aren't going to do that super quantified self stuff. So you've got these two dominant rhetoric camps just kind of marching along behind you. And I see you move, you know, back and forth in between them all the time.
Like a butterfly. Well, I think with the little girls, what I try to do, I have a very intentional approach, because with the little girls, I'm just conditioning them for that conversation. So they'll say, yeah, my period is irregular. What should I do? And so every time I say, your period is a reflection of how you're caring for your body. So let's talk about how you're sleeping. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about this. So the framework is being built. And I was like, it's all under the context of, if you actually want to be powerful in the world, you can use these tools so that you're not disadvantaged by your body or your health or anything like that. So really saying, like, this is the way for you to have agency where you previously don't have agency. And I think that's how you get people to buy into this quant point of view of all of this data you know, like I have super strong feelings about functional medicine because I think functional medicine is really useful. We get a lot of data for it, but it's super elitist. Only rich people can afford functional medicine. And what I found clinically is we don't need it all. Like if you pay attention to all of this as a system, you actually don't need any of it. You don't need a, you know, adrenal function test. Like we can tell the adrenals are fried from the system. And then you give the intervention to improve the adrenals. Like you're never going to hurt somebody by having somebody meditate or sleep more or rest more or manage their communication. Like even what people think and do and say impacts their physiology. So that's also part of the intervention.
So this integrative word of yours, again, sort of comes back. I always look at the pragmatics of actually getting people to adopt things. And so now you're not trying to get them adopt one thing. Like if you were the water woman, your period will change if you drink 6 bottles of this kind of water a day. That's a nice, simple, good, clean pitch. You know, and people will buy those bottles. It's like my son was over here for lunch today and I gave him some kombucha and he said, yeah, I like kombucha because I get fermented, you know, stuff with it. And I'm like, yeah, that's what they're selling it as. That is its health thing. You don't really know what that means or if it's the right fermentation or whether it's actually a lot, you don't know any of that stuff, but they got a simple premise into you. Mm-hmm. And that is now driving your behavior of buying and drinking kombuchas. And so yours, the integrative idea just gets so complicated so fast. You have simple principles like the one you started there with of take control of your, I don't know, it's kind of your efficacy in the world as a woman, like in culture and your relationships and business and everything by healing your period. You know, that's a nice pitch.
Yeah.
You don't hear that very often. That's a pretty unique pitch.
Well, and also just like this idea that like currently when we talk about personalization, nobody's actually doing real personalization, you know? And so it's we've been saying we're inventing the new science of personalization, like real personalization. And I think that that's very, very popular right now and resonant. They're like, I like this. They don't want to do all the work, but they do want to know like, but what's the problem? And we had that same hypothesis that, you know, you want to package it up like kombucha, like this is for your thing, which is why when we launched Brazen, we did not launch any technology because we thought, what are people used to doing? They take a pill, they have a problem and they want to take a pill. So we're like, we have lots of things. We had liquids before. We're like, we have 2 formulas, 1 for PMS, 1 for cramping. They're stupidly effective. I mean, stupidly effective. And yet, you know, we turned them into pills. So it would be just like their, you know, usual experience. We're like, you have PMS. This formula addresses the underlying causes of PMS. So you don't even have to treat particular things. If you address the underlying cause of it, all the symptoms get better. And you would be surprised like how low our sales were with that. And we thought that was going to be super straightforward for us from a marketing standpoint, because like you're used to taking a pill. 80 million women have this problem. They say they'll do anything to do it. I'm like, here, take this formula. It'll make it go away. And like, I don't know. Where's the science?
Yeah. Well, pills come from science.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you,
here's the science. I don't believe the science.
Yeah. If you start using a pill, you're going to get subjected to all the science vetting and you're not a doctor enough. You're not walking around, you know, you're not Johns Hopkins.
I just haven't told you yet.
But it's endless. Human beings have endless ways of saying no. Right.
Yep.
And as a marketer and a business and even a social justice person who's trying to get people, trying to get health to people and efficacy in their lives to people, you're constantly running into no's, just this big badger horde of, I'll say no in this way. And you're like, okay, I'll do some work on that badger. Try to, you know, file that badger's teeth down. Yeah. And then these other 40 badgers are gnawing on you. So it's almost like, I think one of the things I like about you is that you're the center of the storm. You are a symbol yourself. Kirsten Karchmer out doing good things in the world. It short circuits a lot of that stuff because just your ethos, if it's strong enough, like this thing now you're doing with TikTok and helping adolescent girls, is a great ethos element. How much more moral can you get about helping you know, prepubescent girls to go through a difficult, you know, process. That's great.
Actually, we just added another thing. I had this girl on TikTok who wrote to me and said, she said, my family's really poor and we can't afford supplies, period supplies. And so the only thing that I have to use is I go into the bathroom and I try to find the ones out of the trash that are not too used. Yeah. And I was like, oh, and I always tell them, don't ever tell anybody where you are. Right. And I'm like, my instinct is to say, where do you live? I'm going to send you a box of a case of stuff for the next year, you know? And so I started like hunting around, like, how are we going to, like, what are we going to do about this problem? Like 30 million people with periods don't have access every single month. And it turned out that I could buy a menstrual cup, which is a little like things that goes up inside. It's like a tampon, but it's a cup. And for 40 cents on Alibaba, they retail for $30. And I got so mad about that because I was like, we have been raped by men since the beginning of time. We do not need to get raped by other women selling us menstrual supplies, especially when 30 million people don't have any supplies. So what we just decided to do is that at checkout, we're going to order a fuck ton of those Diva cup, those menstrual cups. And every time at checkout, we'll ask people, do you want to donate a dollar or two? Every time you donate $2, six girls will get a cup and we'll match whatever you do. So, you know, as a way to really put forward how important, because like, menstrual pain is the number one reason that girls miss school. Not having supplies is the second reason they miss school. So I was like, how the hell can we raise anybody up if these girls can't go to school? We have to solve this.
Yeah. No, again, like everything you find like that, there's a lot of, you've seen a lot, I've seen a lot of different organizations grow up around supplies and, you know, like taxes, all the money stuff about female supplies and why it's being taxed, why all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of social issue stuff around it. And the energy in that, again, it, you just would think like you can ride that stuff if you're in the right moment of it like that, like where I've got a solution, you know, but I've seen you like for years and years, I've got a solution for you people. How do you get all that sort of moat of doubters and the hard ones to get to and all that to also come in? And I like the way you're doing it now that you're starting with sort of the center of agreeers, like people that aren't hard to get. I sometimes break it down in rhetoric as to you've got yes, yes people who, as soon as you say something, they're like, yes, yes, there's no resistance. Then you have yes, no's. So there's like 80% yes, but still a little no in there. And then no, yes, where it's 30, 70 or whatever. And then no, no, which there may be 2% of yes over there, but it's going to be so much work to get them. Why? Unless you've got the resources, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, stay with your easy yeses and maybe your yes no's. And I think you're doing that now. I think you've found a nice core of people to do good stuff for.
Well, I think, you know, we were talking just a couple of weeks ago about how, you know, on our Conceivable website, it was getting like so much traffic. And I always felt like from Conceivable, which is kind of getting rolled into Brazen right now, that this idea that we could score the whole system, right? That we could look at all of those factors that we're looking at that drives the intervention to fix the problem and score it on a 1 to 100. And the purpose of the score was not to predict how likely they were to get pregnant, but just to help people to understand you're not fertile or infertile. You're more or less fertile and you actually have control over which direction that's going every single day. And we can measure it for you so you can see what's happening. And so that has turned out to be a very valuable entry point for us. People do want to know their score because it ended up being highly, after we did the study, it ended up being highly predictive of the likelihood of natural conception. So in the pilot of like, you know, 105 infertile women, their starting score was only 33 out of 100. But when they crossed the threshold of 60, I thought they were going to have to get to 80. They increased the likelihood of conception by 270%. So that has been a really great place for us to start delivering the score and then really working through with people in a new way, in a very interactive way. These are the problems that are affecting your score. Let's fix these problems and check back next month and see how much the score went up. And so that'll translate into Brazen, because I do think that one, a number of younger women who are not necessarily wanting to get pregnant right now because of egg freezing, I think they are thinking about how can I, like, I was just talking to someone yesterday. She was like, I'm always worried that I'm going to be infertile. I don't know if it's even irrational or not, but I just worry, like, so many people are infertile. I just worry, like, when I start trying, I'm going to find out that I'm infertile too. I was like, oh, we'll just take the score and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I was just thinking while you're talking about that, in some ways you could sell this, like, women have a biological advantage in that they've got a test, like a measurement, like a period that tells you holistic health in a lot of ways, right?
Yes.
Men don't have that. You can't judge something every month that's actually demonstrable and physical that shows you, oh, I drank a lot more water this month, and look, I've gotten this increase in health. So in some ways it's kind of a biological advantage.
Well, that's why I always say it's your period is your instrument of unfair advantage. Because actually men do have it. It's their jizz. I mean, excuse me, ejaculate. Because there's good data that show that, like, a compromised semen analysis is correlated with, like, earlier onset of prostate cancer and more severe onset of prostate cancer, and also diabetes and heart disease, like higher incidence of heart disease and diabetes, because the sperm are so sensitive to diet, lifestyle, exercise, sleep, stress, alcohol, and tobacco.
But yeah, you still have to do a quantified analysis of that. It's not, you know, quite as clear.
No, it's milky.
I knew you're going to, I was like, as soon as I'm saying this,
that was a softball.
Putting this golf ball on the tee, she's going to hit it. Well, cool. This, like I said, I've always been fascinated by you and the way that, you know, you're to me a super communicator. I've always thought that you should be much more successful easily with all this stuff than it's been. I mean, you have fought the fight over and over and over and over and over in many different platforms, investors, just down the line. And it's always been such a nice offer, has social good in it. And it's efficient and it's cheap. It's just weird that it doesn't win more easily, you know?
I think that, you know, I've been saying in many ways, just because I also had the same expectation that, like I stopped being a clinician to sort of serve the larger public. And I thought, oh, well, this is, like, easy because it'll be so cheap and effective and whatever. And, but I recently, you know, I was always saying, like, I don't know, I've got a stick in my spoke. And the reality is I started doing this really great work from Joe Dispenza, and just, it all started shifting. It just, like, untangling. He wrote this book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, which I think is super interesting way of, like, what are the mindsets and emotions that we're addicted to and how to untangle from them. That's actually made a really profound change in the whole process. So I'm happy about that. I feel good about what's happening. And I think that also when we invest our money, I was, like, I like to do delegating, you know, I want to do a lot. So I have to delegate in order to do a lot. But in doing so, I missed a lot of baby steps that I actually needed to be the progenitor of. And so as we're going back and building the score and the process around that from the ground up, we're developing a way that, like, each question that it asks the person about whatever's going on, I can deliver a customized 15-second, what I got trained on TikTok, right? For 15-second videos. You know, I'm a long talker. I love how politely you call me an over-communicator or a super communicator. I would call me an over-communicator, but
you have a lot to talk about. There's a lot here.
There is a lot to talk about it. And I like to talk about it. But anyways, to be able to, with each answer, like we ask them a question and they answer, to give them one, the data, the science by why we say this is true. And then to have a 15-second video in which I'm saying that this is what you need to do about it. So actually building this highly interactive technical delivery system so that people feel like it's not just an app where you're tracking, but you're actually having sort of a technical relationship with me as a coach.
Sure.
But it's, yeah. We can deliver at scale.
Yeah. I've seen this, you know, the promise of technology and education play out in Zeke, and that he wanted to learn video editing, went on to YouTube and started asking questions, seeking out answers. And it's all right there. It's point of need education. It comes from many, many sources. It's video or it's writing or it's comments. and just watch what happens to a human being when they get that kind of access to that form of education, their knowledge level just jumps forward so fast. And we keep, I think, as a species, fighting to get information to each other. And hopefully these technologies, like you said, 15-second TikTok, I can deliver a strategy or a tactic and people can use it right then. You know, they can go get another glass of water right then.
Yeah.
And hopefully this stuff, as it emerges and gets more and more sophisticated, lets us do that kind of stuff. And I think you've been in the middle of all that again, at this vortex of Kirsten Karchmer information and Eastern Med and, you know, this over here in tech. And it's just watching you sit at the center of it. It's been fascinating.
Well, thank you. And book writing. We didn't talk about the book.
And book writing. So sell your stuff a little bit. Tell people where to go find you, what to do.
Thank you. So you can visit us at foreverbrazen.com. I'm guessing this will be in the show notes. If you have period problems, Forever Brazen, if you go to the chat bot on Forever Brazen, it goes directly to me. So if you have questions, I'm very happy to hop on and chat with you about what's going on. If you need a little bit more personal information, if you're trying to get pregnant or want to know your score, go to conceivable.com. If you want to join the TikTok family, I'm at the period expert, 4 o'clock central every single day, Monday through Friday. It's a lot of fun. And those are the best ways to get in touch with me. The best way to get in touch with me is through the chat bot on Forever Brazen, though. That's the most direct. You don't have to remember anything, and Forever Brazen's easy to remember. And check out my book, Seeing Red, and keep your eyes peeled for my new book coming out next year. Doesn't have a name yet. Probably something like Becoming Superhuman, which is a graphic novel about puberty.
Cool. Yeah. Like I said, there's always lots going on with Kirsten Karchmer. Go check out her stuff. Thanks. Thanks, Kirsten.
You're welcome. Nice to see you.
Always. I appreciate it. This has been the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Go check out Kirsten's stuff and I will see you again next week. Get out there and persuade some people. They need it.
Yeah.